We are ex-Overland, and over the past 10 years, my wife and I have established a business doing what we love. Throughout the last 10 years, we have built over 20 Overland vehicles that have taken us and our team around the world as we film our adventures. My name is Clay Croft, and I am the founder and CEO of ex-Overland. On this podcast, we take a deep dive beyond what the camera can capture to offer you as much insight into the world of overland travel as possible. If you haven't heard the news, Overlander Network just got even better. Overlander Network is the place to find all of ex-Overland's legacy and most current premium content, along with our popular masterclass series teaching you how to build your overland vehicle from stock. With Overlander Network, you can now watch on your favorite devices through the new Overlander Network app. You can download all your favorite content to take with you on the trail and enjoy ad-free, family-friendly entertainment. You can watch video versions of this podcast, enjoy monthly live streams, and of course, be the first to watch the Nordic series before anyone else. Right now, you can test drive Overlander Network for free for 3 full days. Take the wheel at overlandernetwork.com.
Welcome, everybody, back to the ex-Overland podcast. With me today are some fellows that are starting to get familiar on the podcast, our global logistics shipping coordinator and several other tasks he does around here, Matt Hopkins. And we have Ryan Connolly back for his second episode. Ryan is our operations manager. He's been on several expeditions, or at least one full expedition.
A couple partials, right.
So he's back again. And these two guys, I have a feeling we're going to have you guys on a lot because, you know, there are just dynamics that go on between the two of you that I feel are perfect. You know, there's a little bit of debate, a little bit of spiciness, you know, happening, some sparks flying, which is the perfect metaphor because today, what are we talking about?
Preventing sparks.
Preventing
sparks. Preventing fires.
And fires.
Yes, exactly.
Not because relationally.
Electronic.
But maybe.
You mean literally right. Concrete, because we're talking about batteries and power management. I'd say broadly, we're talking about electric power management within an overland vehicle. And a huge component of that is batteries and battery management. So I'm going to start by saying, right, like I'm definitely that guy who has enough experience to ask questions, but has some huge areas of ignorance where I just do not know. I did not grow up with a dad who was super mechanical. I didn't grow up in shops, right? So I've just been having to learn things as I go. So even like specifying when we're talking about power management today, we're not talking about an engine and fuel injection or what have you, know, that kind of power, horsepower. We're talking about electrical power.
That's great. Specific.
Yeah.
We'll try not to divert into the weeds.
Oh, yeah. It probably will. It's Friday morning. This could become a thing, like Friday podcast with you guys. I could see that becoming a thing.
Scary.
And I'll never leave town again.
Yeah, that's right. Goodbye.
And we're all coffeeed up because it's still morning. It's before noon, you know, so we have caffeine.
And you're running out of time. Let's get busy. Come on. The sand has disappeared.
It is. The hourglass.
I get nervous. Damaged. That thing makes me stressed.
I'm going to put a valve
on it. Does that stress you out?
It does.
It's
I look at it and it's 3/4 gone. I'm like,
Well, it's because every done. Movie is we're like your life is ticking away. You know, the sands of time. All right. Well, I think that's perfect analogy here in that when we leave our port, so to speak, our harbor, our base, our home, shore power is defined. I found this out working with Clay. You know, that comes from, it's a nautical term, apparently.
Marine.
Yeah. So while you were like in a port on shore, you're plugged in, you're powering up. But once you pull out, now you're having to operate.
Yep. Self-sufficient.
Self-sufficiently. Right.
Yeah.
So kind of like that hourglass, though, once like one of the prerequisites for heading out, I think like pro tip is make sure you plug your truck in, charge everything up, max capacity. So you're at least starting there. But then once you roll out of your garage, the hourglass has been turned.
Yeah.
Right. So where does that begin? Like, let's maybe look at the difference between starter batteries and house batteries. And how do we power an overland vehicle with a lot of electricity to meet our needs?
Well, I mean, depending on the length of overland vehicle, I mean, as you see what the manufacturers are making these days, you can literally take a vehicle off the lot and drive it around the world.
Sure.
You might want to upgrade tires as your first best bet, but depending on what level of overlanding you're wanting to go, your overlanding electronics could consist of a battery charger for your cell phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that right there, an OEM spec in most cases, you can plug it into a cigarette lighter and you're good to go with no auxiliary anything.
Yeah, jump pack in your dash so that you, if you do, your battery dies, you do something wrong, you can self-jump on a like a little 6x4 jump pack and you're good to go.
Yeah, we're talking about power in overland vehicles, electric power. I think that's a tip right there is chargebacks, right?
They work.
Those little chargebacks make... You need to make sure they're charged
yes.
before you leave. It's easy to like have them sit around a long time and right. So mm-hmm. make sure to charge. But then, yeah, as far as getting out of a pickle with your starter battery, if that starts to die, or powering your laptop,
mm-hmm.
a few small devices, right?
Yep.
And I think that's useful because you guys are saying like bare minimum, you drive your vehicle off the lot. It's going to have a starter battery.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know of any that have... Shore batteries right off the
like production vehicle off the lot.
Yeah, there's some, you know, and I'm not 100% if this is just the police versions of these cars, mm-hmm. but I think some of the Yukon and Suburbans now come with an auxiliary battery in the rear.
Huh.
That may just be on that I saw. It was a police vehicle, but
yeah. I haven't seen off the lot OEM with an aux battery.
Not the way we're using it.
Yeah.
Not the way that we're designing and using these things for running winches or extra light bars or refrigerators, etc.
Yeah. The other thing to note, as you said, as we plan to set off from the shore, what you're going to do will determine how much extra power you will need. When we do an expedition overland trip, it's a video movie production trip. And so our power demands are huge just in charging camera batteries and running computers. And so it is by far not your average go out for a weekend on an adventure trip. It's a extended, self-sustained, high power consumption adventure.
Right. And I think that puts us in a good place to address this subject because our needs are so extreme.
Definitely.
They are beyond. So like we've had to really push ourselves.
Yep.
Especially to be self-sufficient, to not have to pack, say, a gas-powered generator, which totally. I know in the old days before solar ramped up and batteries and power management ramped up to where it is today, we had to do that kind of thing.
Yep.
But now, you know, we just went on the Nordic expedition and we had three vehicles. We were really maybe arguably the most elaborate film production to date. Mm-hmm. And no generators. We were running all that on solar and the system.
I actually just watched episode 5, I think, on the network. And
yeah.
that there's a short section in there where Clay and Richard are discussing, did we bring enough solar panels?
Yeah.
It's right there in the middle of the show. He, Clay, Richard, and like 4 sheep. So
so this...
Just solar panels, though. The sheep are incidental.
They're incidental. The sheep are definitely a theme throughout the whole Nordic series. I got to say, those guys are cute, too. I wish that they had brought one.
Well, Richard's only like 5'8", so he's cute by definition.
Yeah. Okay.
Love you, Richard.
So... We're heading out, you know, you guys, I can tell you, it's Friday morning here. all right, so what I want to look at, though, so what you just mentioned, Ryan, is when we head out on an expedition, like we have these massive needs, power needs, right?
Yep.
So let's look at, for starters, before we get in like full-on overlanding, your typical weekend warrior,
okay,
right? Maybe they want to run a powered fridge.
Yep.
They want to... couple and they need to run a laptop. Maybe they're going to fly a drone to a little small, you know, video productions, things like that.
Yep. Charge your camera batteries after a day taking pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the big one, you know, for basic outfits would probably be the powered fridge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a big step up. So what kind of power needs are people looking at for that kind of experience?
So I, for quite a while, existed on just a start battery running a fridge. What happens is if you park for too long, you start to drain your battery. Now you're draining down the battery that keeps your car going, that starts your car. So you quickly, as soon as you stop moving, your need to store power goes up. if you're using it, I mean, if you're just parking your car and not using it, you don't need it. But if you're parking your car and things are still running, like mm-hmm. your fridge, mm-hmm. you now need to have more capacity so that while it's sitting there and the alternator is not creating juice, you can feed your refrigerator electrons.
Okay.
I want to also remind us all that the OEM spec on most all batteries and alternators for vehicles were designed to do what the vehicle is intended to do. Mm. Turn on, turn your radio on, go on down the road, and have enough battery to last up to 3 to 4 weeks without it running, without it charging, and still be able to start the vehicle. As soon as we start adding anything more than ideally a cell phone charger or anything that's going to hit the capacity of what a cigarette lighter or a power outlet can do within the vehicle, we're already going beyond that. So I've always remembered for all the years and stuff that I've messed up and screwed up, will it work with this minimum? Probably. Is it good for it? Probably not. Mm. Is it potentially dangerous? In a lot of cases, it kind of became to a point of danger.
Dangerous how?
Sparks, fires, not
because you're overloading the system or something like that.
Simply being broke down now because my car won't start because I used too much of yeah. one thing and left it on and drained it down to nothing and had no backup. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's always the potential upgrades to go above and beyond that OEM, or maybe just starting with upgrading the OEM.
Yeah, yeah. Without creating a whole second location for a battery, just make that
upgrading the starter battery.
Yeah, your start battery gets replaced by a newer, higher capacity battery.
Okay.
And don't forget the alternator too, because in a lot of cases, people are thinking that my battery's dead, I just jumped in, my alternator's going to fix that. Well, alternators really maintain battery voltage. They don't really pick up that voltage that you lost due to an existential drain from a refrigerator or from having to crank it on a really, really cold day. You need to have other forms of battery charging to keep those batteries topped off, such as the battery tenders and the different products that are out there right there for keeping our batteries tight, just like we have here in the hangar. Everything is constantly being tendered because you never know. Maybe you have a parasitic draw. Maybe it's just the fact that they're just sitting for a long period of time. We want to keep them nice and tightened up.
Yeah. And that's, you know, what I'm thinking about. That is why, I mean, there's so many topics to cover here. But this is also why something like a RedArc battery management system, power management system, I guess is how that would be described. And part of the power is the batteries, right, that you're managing.
As soon as you throw in an auxiliary battery, you're saying, okay, I want to protect my start battery from all these other things that I've done. You now are saying, I need a second battery to both be capacity, but also to take away some of that impact on my start battery and use this auxiliary battery to feed all the other needs. As soon as you say, I want another battery, you need a way to maintain it, to manage it, to know what it's doing, because that's not in your OEM car system anymore. So we start looking at alternative, extra, secondhand systems that manage that battery.
So before we dive into that, right, which I would consider that to be the next step in building a permanent overland vehicle, a setup, you know, that would really be self-sustaining, you know, is to actually install some kind of house batteries like you're talking about in a complete power management system.
Right.
But something that's available today to, say, a weekend recreator that wasn't around, I think, even 5 to 10 years ago, certainly not like it's available today, and that's the portable power stations, which you can now pack along.
Awesome.
And yeah, they really impress me because, again, for like a weekend or a small trip, you can buy those, you know, from some sporting goods store, right? I'm thinking of something like a Goal Zero, or there are a bunch of different brands now. Dometic has a brand, I think.
Yeah, Blue Yeti. There's a bunch now.
Jackery. Right, Jackery.
It's getting better.
Yeah. And you're right. It's a great solution, especially when you have a truck or a vehicle you're using as your daily driver.
Yeah.
Because now instead of permanently installing a whole bunch of stuff that's heavy and it impacts your daily usage, you can just throw it in when you need it. So now your fridge comes out when you're going to work every week, but then it's time to go on an adventure. The fridge goes in and the battery goes in. It all gets strapped down in the back. And now that external battery will be charged by your alternator because it plugs in your car, so it could be maintained
cigarette lighter
by your alternator
inverter.
Yep. But then when you turn your car off, it's feeding your fridge and your other accessories.
Yep.
It's a great solution, especially because you can remove it from your vehicle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. And especially for someone who's getting into this and isn't quite ready for a huge commitment, right, with completely rebuilding the vehicle.
Yeah.
And then those same, I'm just looking at that system before we move on to the next, right? Yeah. The other thing you can do nowadays with that type of system, along with charging it while you're driving via your alternator by means of an inverter or a 12-volt cigarette lighter, correct?
Yeah, most of those battery packs come with a 12-volt plug. So you can directly, you don't need an inverter in between that.
Great, because the inverter is kind of a separate option. A lot of rigs mm-hmm. have them, but a lot of rigs don't.
Yeah, they don't. Typically, they don't come in a truck. The newer trucks are coming with inverters where you can plug your 115, 120 volt normal appliance into the back of the truck. Mm. They have an onboard inverter that's inverting direct current into alternating current.
Okay. So I'm going to come back to that too.
Yeah, that's
direct
okay.
alternator.
Because actually, converter or inverter is a very distinct
yep.
difference.
Yep.
Exactly. And I want to cover those kinds of things like that. That's where my knowledge starts to run out. Like when you get into the more technical, I have this big picture concept stuff, but the technical stuff's where I run out. Okay. So if you have a system like one of these charge packs or power packs, yep. power stations. Like electric generators, people call them.
Yeah.
If you're moving every day, you can get a recharge from driving your vehicle.
Yes.
But if you're not, and you're like, hey, we're at this awesome campsite, we're staying here for a few days, that's when it would make sense to have a solar panel, right? That you could just unfold, put into the sun, and plug into the charge pack.
You got it.
Yep.
Okay.
The beauty of portable solar panels, too, is you can put them directly in the sun. When we put solar panels on our truck, we do kind of run into this dilemma, like, oh, I want to park in the shade because it's nice and cool, but wait, I need to charge my battery, so I need to park in the sun. A portable panel lets you drag it out. You know, they usually come with like a 20-foot cord, and you can stick it directly in the sun, face it perfectly at the sun, and then your juice in your batteries is the best effectiveness of that solar panel.
And move it with the sun, because if you park your truck and your panel is now in direct sunlight, but 1 hour it's behind a tree or behind a hill, you've just lost all your extra sunlight you wanted. So you're not going to move your truck. You're already set up camp at that point.
Man, I know, you know, what Ryan's saying is just speaking to me, and that, like, with my rig, just there's a solar panel on top of it permanently mounted.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I start getting out in the summer super hot, I'm exactly like you said, Ryan, I'm looking for shade.
Yeah.
So I've actually added a portable solar panel to plug into the whole outfit that I can, you know, run a you can buy extension cords and everything, run that thing 40, 60 feet outside of your camp where the sun is. So, so somebody who just wants kind of a minimalist system to be able to go enjoy some weekend outings and have some power can purchase a charge pack, a powered fridge, and a solar panel. It's all, you know, it's warrantied separate stuff that you can put in or take out of your vehicle. You don't have to build it in, and you're good to go.
Yep.
The last advantage of doing that is when you sell your truck because you want a new one, it gets to go with you.
Or you have multiple vehicles. You take your wife's vehicle this week and you take your vehicle the next week, and you can swap back and forth and just keep everything as portable as possible.
That's a huge win right there.
Yep.
Just the portability from vehicle to vehicle.
One caution, when you put all this stuff in your truck, make sure you lash it down well. Because this is the problem. Like, oh, I got this great portable fridge and a big battery, and I'm going to just throw it in the back of my truck. Great, until you actually end up not on the road anymore, or you see that pothole you didn't expect, or you hit the rock you didn't expect, and then guess what? Your fridge is coming through the back window. Not good.
I agree, and that is something I am guilty of in so many ways, whether it's a Nalgene water bottle or it's a powered fridge. It's terrifying to me to think of what will go flying through the cab of my truck in an accident. So I feel like we should do a podcast even on lashing.
Cargo securement.
Yeah.
Jimmy, I don't know
that's
why
his
it
job,
is,
right?
But I feel like you're probably the guy that's probably had that trickle of stuff out of his bags on his bike before down a road that you've had to turn around for 2 miles and pick all your stuff back up.
Let's just say I do not use bungee cords ever again on my motorcycle. There have been a couple times when I've been like, I can't believe I'm still alive. They're somebody's looking out for me because those stupid things coming undone, and you know, oh
goodness,
yeah, no, I'm that guy. I do my best, but yeah, that's even my dog is not always lashed down. He's kind of wandering around the cab. So, so anyway, so that would be like I think maybe option one,
sure,
right? I get option one would be nothing except your starter battery, upgrading your starter battery, taking good care of that
for sure.
But option two, if you want to protect your starter battery and not be so worried about having something happen and power, powered fridge and whatnot, would be one of these portable setups like we described.
Yep.
Option three is building this into your vehicle in a permanent way.
Yep.
So you have a dedicated build, probably. This is going to be an overland vehicle you can take out for weeks, months. There's really no end. If you build a self-sustaining platform,
yep,
you can just keep going, right?
Yep.
So shall we go down that path?
Yeah, I think this is where the math comes in.
Okay.
Because, you know, if you have your charge station and it dies on a Saturday night, you throw it back in your truck, you turn your truck on, you drive home because you're out of juice. Yeah. You didn't now just drain everything in your vehicle, and now you're dead in the water because you can't get anything started, and maybe you missed the point of recovery at that point.
Yeah, and you're somewhere on the west coast of Africa in a,
yep,
you know, a less developed country, and yeah, you're not running into that issue.
It's amazing how far away you can go with very, very minimal knowledge.
Yeah, it's the problem of modern technology. Back.
And then learn. And when I say far away, I mean, I've traveled to different parts of this world, but some of the most far away places I've been have literally been close to home in Death Valley National Park.
Sure.
And I couldn't have felt more on Mars.
Sure. I agree with that. Right over in the Centennial Valley. I've been over there a few times, and I feel like I'm in Mongolia or something.
Cool.
Yeah.
So far remote.
Yep.
But let's look at, you know, well, you guys have been dropping a lot of pro tips, and I would drop another one, which is with all this stuff, driveway testing, driveway camps, right? Just play around with this stuff as much as possible before you get out too far, and you'll get the kinks out of the system.
Well, truly, not every trip that XL goes on is not an expedition.
Right.
They're weekend trips. Like, we filmed some of those too, right? Like, out and about, so you've done them.
Yep.
Like, those are not just adventures for the adventure's sake. They're also testing platforms. They're validation of our systems. They're an important step in the ability to then go out for 4 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And the consequences are small, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You get to,
yeah,
you know, have an excuse to play around with your gear.
Testing your guy. You know, I don't think I ever told anybody this, or maybe I told somebody here last, but the first podcast I was on when I met with Clay and we did our search and rescue podcast, an hour before that, I was really thinking I'm not going to make it in time because I was really behind the hangar up here in the hills, stuck up to my rocker panels in snow, using a winch. And I don't even really want to get into it, but this weird little finagled thing I had on the ground to hold me to try to pull my car out with Max Tracks.
This was all going on before you came to
right
the podcast.
Before I got, I'm like, I'm going to take a quick lap over Flathead Pass and found a lot of snow. And almost didn't make it. So if I was a little extra sweaty or looking winded, that's why. I was shoveling with a Max Track because I forgot a shovel. You know.
Yeah, shoveling with a Max Track, though, you can do that. That's
miserable, but it's doable. It's better than your fingers.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're always out there testing and trying that stuff. So do the same thing with your batteries. I currently have a Dometic refrigerator right now hooked to a lithium ion battery just to see how long it can go. Mm-hmm. We put it at 8 below 0, and it's, so far, it's still at 13.4 volts after, I think, 15 hours of running.
Nice.
And it's only at 40% capacity. So I just want to see, with no additional charging, how long could that go by itself before I find out the hard way back in Death Valley?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, just having this stuff, you know, playing around, tinkering with it all the time. It's one of the cool things about working here, and just the way we have this set up, is you can constantly be playing around with the gear. Mm-hmm. So we're building an onboard system.
Yep. Dedicated install.
A dedicated install. So, and we're looking to build a self-sufficient platform power-wise. Let's look at the steps behind that. Ryan, you're working on vehicles here all the time.
Right.
Okay.
Let's start with battery choice, right? Because we wanted to talk a little bit about what types of batteries might you choose. And Matt hinted at it already. Your start battery is designed to be a start battery. It is not designed to be a house or auxiliary battery. So when I pick a battery, Matt, what am I thinking?
Well, you got options. You got your traditional lead acid, which we've had for 100 years.
Yep.
That and we're talking about picking the house battery now.
Yeah.
Not the starter.
Well, battery. I'm just saying different batteries in general, because you technically can run it all off of lead acid if you wanted to, but understand the differences of what you're doing with the battery and where you're putting it and how you're going to plan on using it. Is, you know, there's a lot of research that can go into that. So do your homework with, you know, we have a lead acid option, you have your traditional AGM option, now we have these newer lithium ion batteries. Mm-hmm. So understand what their capabilities are, and then understand where you might want to incorporate that into your system to where it's going to be the most beneficial and you get the most use out of that battery.
And okay. Even within those, you guys, we have, just to be simply, there are two types of those. There are the deep, what's it called?
Deep cycle?
Deep cycle. That's the word. Yeah. Sorry, blank. Deep cycle batteries. And then the,
what's up?
Marine RV.
The not deep cycle battery, right? A deep cycle battery is designed to be discharged nearly all the way. Whereas the battery as your start battery, it's designed to be continually recharged and never go to zero, which is why typically if you kill your car battery in the winter and it's dead, you might have literally permanently damaged that battery because it's not designed to go to zero or whatever zero looks like. Whereas a deep cycle battery can tolerate that. It's in the design and architecture of the actual battery.
So definitely what I hear you saying is this is why when you're buying a house battery, mm-hmm. right, your auxiliary batteries to go in your permanent build.
Yep.
You, at least for starters, like looking at, you want to buy a deep cycle, something that can be depleted, recharged,
yep.
depleted, recharge. And is deep cycle, is that lead acid and AGM?
Both.
But not lithium. Lithium's a whole different animal, correct?
No, lithium will work the same way. They're just,
but they're not labeled deep
they
cycle.
They have the ability, in the nature of a lithium ion, it has the ability to discharge at a deeper level all of lithium ion batteries. I think.
But you wouldn't go in and ask, I'm looking for a deep cycle lithium ion.
I don't think so.
Okay.
No,
I don't think so.
You don't want to use it for starting. We understand a little bit too of cranking amps.
There you go.
Okay. So when he says he's going to pull it down to zero, he's not, I wanted to be clear, we're talking about 0%.
Yeah.
You can yank that battery down really hard with this massive blow from a starter on a flywheel to start your engine. If we remember just how diesel trucks have been built for a very long time, and I believe most all diesel trucks are pretty much set up this way. They have already two batteries under the hood. Now, both of those batteries are working in parallel with one another.
To start a big diesel
correct.
Engine.
Yeah, so you're doubling your pretty much amp hour to get that ultimate pull you have to start that big, heavy motor. Whereas a gas doesn't take nearly that much cranking power to start, where a single battery is sufficient. When we talk about adding an auxiliary battery, we're isolating those two to where they'll help each other in the charging phase, but when you're starting the vehicle, you're only pulling from that initial start battery, and not the house battery too. There's an isolator in between that says, nope, you're not going to get any power from that.
Yep.
That way you're continually running your fridge and everything else and not draining it from everything.
Yeah, your start battery is safe because of that power managing system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so lead acid... What's going on with lead acid batteries?
Old
why
technology.
Would you, what do they do? Why would you choose one? Is there any reason other than price?
There was a time where if you needed you can top it off with battery acid.
Right.
If it was leaking, I mean, they had a
you
little
could rejuvenate it in a sense.
You can maintain them.
Yeah.
I think is really always what the term was, is that they were a maintainable battery, whereas these newer batteries are not maintainable in the sense of being able to almost rebuild it.
Right. Like the AGMs.
Right. Yeah. Once you killed it, it's dead. It's a garbage. It needs to be recycled product.
Yeah. Okay. So, and lead acid too, which we talked about a little bit ago, has to stay standing upright.
Mm-hmm.
If you tip it over, you're tipping over a cup of water. And if any of us have ever seen a battery explode, they do bubble up and battery acid will pour out of the top of it and leak around it. Whereas an AGM battery, which is absorbed glass mat, which is that battery acid that's basically absorbed into a sponge, and I'm sure there's a way better way to describe it than that, but that is a better way to think of the difference between the two, where you have one that's liquid and one that's more of just an absorbed version of that, that can be held in any different direction and not tip over, not leak. It will not leak.
Yep.
Lithium ion works the same way, where it can be put in any different direction or angle if you need to when placing it in its battery box.
Yep.
Okay, I could see where for off-road vehicles especially, that would be helpful.
Yeah,
super helpful.
Right? Yeah, you'd stick them in all sorts of weird spots that you couldn't fit it normally.
So really like for overlanding, vehicle-based recreation, the kind of things that we're here to talk about, lead acid sounds obsolete.
Yeah.
Like you're probably going to want to choose AGM just for starters and then maybe lithium beyond that. But you think we've covered what we need to about lead acid?
Well, there's a perk to that is that with your drive battery, your lead acid, you the old days of I need to
jump or power.
Lead acid can have a higher tolerance of being jumped compared to an AGM and lithium ion. I'm not even sure if you really even want to jump a lithium ion.
It's a good question. I couldn't even.
That is a great question.
Most marine, when they have a long drain cycle, they don't, it's not good for them to jump them really hard and fast. That's why we have what we call a trickle charger. You want to trickle charge them, and you always want to build that power back up in a very slow, gradual state. You don't want to jump blast a bunch into that. There's something, I'm not a chemist or a, I understand really what breaks it down inside there, but it's not good for them to do any kind of significant jumping.
This is why, okay, I remember previous podcast we did with John Brothers of Red Arc helped me out tremendously on all this stuff. Okay. Like before I sat down with John, I did not know what was going on. And after that podcast, I got the picture, right? Yeah. And one of the things I learned was these batteries, AGMs and especially lithiums, are very expensive. Mm-hmm. And so part of where you get your money's worth and a power management system of some kind of controller, is just taking care of your batteries, tending those batteries.
Amen.
You're saving dollars and you're optimizing their use at the same time.
Yep. You can't just take two wires and attach your lithium house battery to your start battery. It's not a good idea. You'll kill both of the batteries at different stages. Like, it's not a healthy thing, especially a lithium battery. Even AGM over lead acid, they each have their own charge profiles. They need to be delivered power in a careful manner, controlled by a computer, a little chip, basically.
Yeah.
So that's why as soon as you say, I want a house battery, you also say, I want a battery manager to take care of my house battery.
I'd say I need a battery manager of some kind, right?
Like, exactly.
And that's it's essential. So like when you're going to take this plunge, be ready to go all the way.
Yeah, the simplest version, Red Arc makes, a bunch of people make it, but Red Arc makes a BC to DC conversion or manager. Sorry, DC to DC converter.
Direct current to direct current.
Manager.
Is that what we're talking about?
So what it does is it's a cool brick. We don't have one here. It's a brick that goes between your house battery and your alternator. And it's also connected to your start battery, so it knows what's happening. And it manages the power coming from your alternator to your house battery. And it has settings that you can, when you install it, you set it up to charge whatever house battery you have, whether it's AGM, lead acid, or lithium. So that object, that DC to DC device, is the manager that's controlling or taking care of your house battery. It's the simplest version. You can't, like, it doesn't have a display. It doesn't have, like, you can't Bluetooth connect to it. It's just a brick.
But it's going to be doing it.
Does the job of taking care of your house battery.
That sounds like an affordable option.
It is. It's
for a lot
great
of
option.
Yeah.
So let's touch on why is it bad to overcharge a battery?
Hmm? Okay. Depends on your type, right?
It depends on the type.
Each one is going to need a different delivery of electrons.
When we think of what's in our cell phone, lithium ion battery.
Yeah.
What happens when you leave it plugged in for multiple days on end? Does it explode?
The old phones used to like be cooked. Do I charge it at 10% or should I charge it at 45%? When should I charge? You remember that?
Oh, I do. Yeah.
And a lot of that was due to the rate of, they would always say that that's the longevity of it. If you let it drop down to zero.
Yeah.
I always look at it this way, is that if you're running, maybe in a hydraulic fluid analogy, if you have a lot of, you're really low on hydraulic fluid, you don't have the capacity of fluid there to create the pressure you may want to create. So when your battery's at 2%, are you going easier on your phone? No, you're still rolling Facebook and doing everything you can as fast as you can, loading that phone up with as many apps and using that thing in that really, really low capacity, which in turn is wearing that battery out more because it's got to work harder with that low capacity that it has compared to having a full charge. But the idea of overcharging it, anymore, we may be putting more wear on the battery in the end of the day, but it's really not going to have any big safety issues. It's not going to blow up in our hands. It's not just going to quit on us the next day.
Most chargers are smart enough. I have a pretty old charger in my garage right now that it's probably from like 1970, and it has a little like needle gauge on it. Mm-hmm. And when I plug it into the battery, there's only one safety feature. And I hear it occasionally. It's a thermal like fuse, and you hear it go click and it shuts off. You're like, oh, look at that. It was too hot when it was charging my battery. Yep. But hey, I got some electrons.
Mm.
Not good for my battery.
All of this is underscoring for me the value of a really high quality battery power management system, like, device, like the controller that you were talking about, right? Because I mean, this is, we're talking sophisticated stuff when we're talking about And I think that's what people, I remember John Brothers saying this, and it was a great analogy, I felt. He was like talking about what a controller can do as far as the alternator being able to charge your batteries. And he was like, without that, you're still going to get some charge, but it's kind of like if you're trying to pour a draft and pull a draft beer and you're just cranking it and you don't know how to hold the glass really and just get it just right. Yeah. It's just going to kind of be spilling over and you're never going to get that perfect fill.
That's a cool analogy.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, I think I see what you're saying.
So you get all foam and no beer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's, and you, and no matter how much beer you pour in, you're still just going to wind up with all that foam.
That's a cool, I've never heard that one before.
Yeah, it's, well,
I like that.
You're leading me to the story of if we went back to lead acid batteries and overcharging, it does exactly that. So you would wonder, how do you overcharge a battery on accident?
Right.
You know, because generally you plug it into the wall, it's going to do 110, you know, through your inverter. Most everything's going to charge up to your, you know, 12, 13, 14 volts, depending on what its capabilities are for charging. Now, most modern alternators, think if not all of them, have internal regulators, and that's regulating its output voltage charging capabilities. Those can go out. I've had two experiences in my life where they go out. One time it was on an old alternator on a four battery bank of lead acid batteries in a semi truck, and the other time was literally a few weeks ago on just two batteries in a diesel truck on a brand new alternator.
Oh no.
That happened to have a regulator fail, and it charged these batteries to 19 volts.
Oh,
for a significant amount of time.
Oh, no.
And what happened was these batteries overcharged and exploded battery acid all over under the hood of the truck. This is a no fault of, you know, my own. This is a manufacturing flaw and it happens.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that the AGM or lithium, well, I'm not going to talk about lithium, but the AGM in place of that drive battery, there's lead acid, has a higher tolerance for that.
Yeah.
Then, because it's not going to blow up. Remember, there's no just liquid floating around in there that has that capability of doing that. But it's something I don't wish upon my worst enemy.
Yeah.
Not even Ryan. Like, that would be, that's a nightmare.
Except for a good story. Like, it's always worth the story.
It's a nightmare to deal with. And it's something that, yeah, it's without getting super sophisticated with these charge controllers, but it can happen anywhere that, you know, in ways that you didn't even anticipate to have.
Yeah, I remember, I think in our our masterclass series with the third gen 4Runner on the network.
Yeah.
I want to say there's a part of that where Tanner is talking about hooking up the solar. And it, I think what he's saying is you don't connect that solar until the management system is in place, because otherwise you have direct power going to the battery and it can just cause havoc and it can even be dangerous. So that management system is a central part of the whole kit that we're talking about, right? It's got to be there. Now, AGM, because we're starting with batteries, we're going to select batteries, AGM versus lithium. I think that's the big question in today's market for most overlanders, for most people doing vehicle-based recreation.
Totally. You're balancing cost and weight and technology.
And functionality,
but
too.
Your big role, the beauty of lithium is, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's like half the weight of an AGM battery. It might not be half, but it's a lot less. Same capacity, same abilities, ability to charge, run all the things you need to run, but it's so much lighter. But it's like four times the cost, maybe, or six?
Yeah, it can be. I mean, a lot of that stuff I've noticed is coming down in price.
True.
But for example, when I was saying like just upgrading the OEM, I'm running the majority of everything on my particular 4Runner off of a pretty juiced up X2 power AGM battery.
Right.
If I had the OEM battery in there and decided to go with a house battery, then I might consider that lithium ion, but I'm never going to go with just a single lithium ion. That's going to be my particular house long drain battery that I'll have as an auxiliary setup that I could potentially run in parallel with other batteries if I need to create more amp hours.
Pretty much. Nobody that I know of, right? You can use a lithium as your start battery, but nobody really encourages it.
It must be a particular kind, because I'm not...
Yeah, they're not typically designed for it.
Yeah, I wouldn't use the ones that I personally have for start, because I don't think they have the cranking up.
It happens.
Yeah.
People do it. I think Richard might have even done it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I just recently, you know what? I think Richard did that in his new, like he and Ashley for their Tundra.
Yeah.
And I remember kind of questioning him on that, which will be, you know, perfect because something I want to talk about, which you know, they're Canadians, and he was talking about how much he loves like Nordic overlanding and and trips to, you know, to the North Pole in winter. And I was like, well, why are you going with lithium then?
Yeah.
Right? Because that is...
Cold temp problems?
Yes. Like when I've done research on lithium versus AGM, it actually gets frustrating to me being a Montanan, living here in the Northern Rockies, hearing these guys talk about it's a no-brainer, absolutely buy lithium, it's worth the cost, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting here going, but what about the fact that they won't charge below 30 degrees? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, now you need to buy a heating element, or you need to buy lithium batteries that self-heat and use their own power to self-heat, mm-hmm. right? So, like, if you're in cold weather, if you live in a place like this, which a lot of the world does, mm-hmm. right? Let's look at the pros and cons of lithium versus AGM in a climate like ours.
It does go back to Matt's. It's about math. Right. In the end, it's electrons, and what are you consuming them, and when are they being consumed, and how long can you consume them for? Right. Because if you have a self-heated lithium battery, it'll stay outside for as long as you want. Because guess what? It's minus 40, but the battery's 32 degrees.
And as long as it's 32 degrees, you can have it plugged in and charge.
Yeah, exactly. It can do its thing. But now you are consuming some of your electrons
to keep
keeping the battery warm. That's fine as long as you have enough.
And on the opposite side, there's been warnings at times of a lithium ion battery in that drive battery location getting too hot.
Sure.
Because we forget how hot it does get in an engine compartment when you have a strong running motor there without the fan going.
Sure.
So you don't want to overcook that battery, because it'd be just like you leave your phone on your dashboard in a sunny day, that thing's 900 degrees and you pick it up and it burns your face.
Yeah.
So
we just run it. We get into
it just shuts lots, down.
Lots of edge cases, right? Where we just have to be careful about what we, so we know what we're doing.
Okay.
If you know your environment, if you know where you're going to be, if you know your demand, if you can start to pull those numbers together to have some math to be prepared to go into the environment you're going into, you can make those choices.
Perfect. Let's backtrack here in this way. Then we're building out a system for our vehicle, right? A permanent install.
Yeah.
What I hear you guys saying is the first thing we need to do is the math.
Yeah.
We need to assess our needs.
Mm-hmm.
What power needs do we have? What does that look like? And do the calculations, and then we can buy and install accordingly, right? Build accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
So what math are you talking about, Matt? I'm an English major and a former English teacher, right? So when we get into the math world, it's exciting to me, but I need other brains around besides my own, and things like amp hours and wattage and volts, right? Like I look at my charge meter or charge controller and it's like, there's this many volts happening and this many watts and this many amp hours. Can we get some clarity on that? Like what's going on with that stuff?
Yeah. I recommend you go to YouTube and talk to a guy who's a math major and he'll explain it to you fully. I can give you kind of a quick crash course of how I go about it, and really, all these devices that we have, if it's not labeled on the box or on the particular device itself, there's a spec sheet somewhere for it online.
For like my iPhone or my laptop, like how much
everything
power it draws?
Everything we have here, except the hourglass, literally has a spec sheet somewhere that is telling us what its capabilities are.
What it
for
needs.
For a min and max, what it needs.
What it's required.
How long it's going to work for what it is.
Yeah.
That's where you need to just start right there, is to just understand the differences of from amp hours to wattage to voltage to clear down to Ohm's law when you're actually wiring this stuff together, to know where you need resistance and where you don't and how much resistance at that. Once you get a good rough understanding of that, everything has got the number labeled on top of it of how long it could go for. So these are, this for example is a 740 cold cranking amp battery with,
does it say on there?
That's all I can read upside down right now. But if you look at your lithium ion battery that we don't have in the table right here, that'll also tell you your amp hours that it's good for. So right there, you can do quick calculations. If I've got a 100 amp hour battery and then another 100 amp hour battery, and they're both, let's say for easy numbers, 12 volt batteries. If I hook them in parallel, I'm going to have, now in parallel, I'll have a 200 amp hour battery that's still producing 12 volts. Now, if I hook them in series, now I have a 100 amp hour battery that's producing 24 volts. So that's what you need to use and understand.
Welcome to an intro to electrical engineering.
Yeah, no, far, far from it. That is this big in the scheme of what I could be really explaining. Or I would have to pay someone else to explain because that's not going to be for me. But those are the simple, all right, that's what I know I need for battery power. And now why do I need 100 amp hours over 200 amp hours? Well, that comes down to time or your potential amp hour draw from whatever you're putting on there. Do you have 3 George Foremans and a refrigerator and a microwave? Or are you just simply running the microwave? Because bigger is not always better. You may not need to have a series of 4 batteries in a row or 4 batteries in parallel just to run your refrigerator unless you're planning on it running for 9 days with no auxiliary charging around you.
So what are amp hours?
Amp hours, I'd call it, it's the capacity to provide power to a device that it's the flow of power to the device.
Is there a way to calculate? Like, does that mean like I have 100 hours of X amount of amps?
Okay, yeah.
Output?
If you're using one amp.
Yeah,
you're consuming 1 amp.
Okay, this is helpful.
You will have 100 hours
to run that device.
Capacity from a 100 amp hour battery.
Yep.
Right?
That's,
so if I have
the beginning of this equation.
That's right. If I have 10 1 amp devices, I'm consuming 10 amps.
See, instantaneously. That's a way better explanation than I just gave you.
There you go.
So if I'm consuming 10 amps, I will have
10 hours on that battery.
10 hours of capacity to feed that thing.
Yes.
Right?
You guys don't know how happy it makes me to finally start to understand this type of thing. Like, it's just like, now I can plug in the numbers to do the equation to figure out what my needs are, right?
And like Matt said, every item you have has a spec sheet that says what does it consume. So like your fridge, if you open up your fridge manual, it'll say, it'll actually have 2 numbers. It'll have its, I forgot what it's called, like it's running current draw or amp draw, and then it's peak amp draw, because a fridge is a compressor, so when it starts, it's kind of like your engine. It like takes this big peak of energy to start it, but then it's running and it runs at a lower number. So it has 2 numbers.
This is also, I'll just throw in here, this is why before I head out on a trip, while my truck is plugged into shore power, I crank up my fridge. Ooh. I cool everything down while I'm in shore power, and then
smart. Yeah. Okay. So now, this is what Matt is experimenting with, his lithium battery and his Dometic fridge. He's like, got it plugged in. It's just sitting there to see what it will do over time.
Yeah.
So he's experimenting with it. You can do the math. You can say, oh, my Dometic says it'll consume, I don't know what the number is, 3 amps when it's continuously running. Well, guess what? On my 100 amp hour battery, that'll run for 100 divided by 3 hours.
Yeah.
So 33 hours at a continuous run.
And I'll probably find that it's actually going to be really sufficient at 24 hours.
Sure.
So I'm going to go from that hard math to real life.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm also
going to give yourself a good buffer.
Totally. Yeah. Because I'm in a shop. I'm in a very controlled environment. I'm not bouncing around in the desert, or I'm not on my way up to Dead Horse, Alaska. You know, there's so many variables that are not happening because it's in that very controlled environment. So you always just add that buffer on there. And that's where you decide, man, I'm right there on the cusp with this one battery, maybe I need a second.
A second just means I'm good. If I'm powering off a solar and I'm in a storm for 3 days, or it's winter and there's not much daylight, anything like that, that extra battery just gives you the cushion.
Especially if we're talking about a fridge, because that's about maintaining a consistent environment. So if your ambient environment changes, the amount of energy your fridge needs to control its temperature is going to change.
And this is why, too, I've heard National Luna fridges have such an excellent reputation because they're super efficient.
Yeah.
Which, for overlanding and the kind of power needs we're talking about, that would mean everything.
Yeah.
Something that's going to, the more efficient, the better. I've also heard that this is why some of the more efficient overlanding fridges our chest style, because cold air sinks.
Yeah.
And if you have like an RV vertical style, like in the camper I have right now, like all that air is just spilling out.
Totally. It falls out.
Yeah.
Cold air sinks. So.
And there's a big variable, and I'm not sure what this equation looks like, but however many times did you slide your hand in there, grab a beer, and then close the lid again? You're constantly letting that cold air out.
Yeah.
Plus removing volume. So you take volume minus X. No, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right.
I used to be the cooler Nazi before I had a powered fridge in my overland vehicle,
I was that guy too.
Family. I'd be like, kids, get out of the cooler. Shut the lid. grease is melting. You're like, oh gosh, it's now I'm like, I live in the luxury world of like, you open the fridge, you're like,
and all your lunch meat's frozen. There's four beers exploded because it was at -8. You're like, wow, I really didn't see that coming, did I?
Yeah.
Whoops.
But I don't have to yell at my kids anymore, which is nice.
That's good. They probably like you more.
That's right.
And that was all good reasoning to buy the powered fridge.
Oh, dude,
you know, I don't want to yell at my kids anymore. I mean, that'll be a better family situation.
Actually, though, this is a real story. I'm not even faking this. Like, the secret to making my wife happy on a camping trip in our truck was a powered fridge. It is by far, and she will vouch for this, anyone can ask her, her favorite mod in our overlanding vehicle is a powered fridge. Because she could bring vegetables, she could bring yogurt, she could bring all the things she loves to eat in the front country and not have to worry about it going bad or being weird or...
I'll piggyback off of that, say, like, I was able to sell my wife on the idea because mine's an 80 liter, it's huge.
Yeah.
But when we go to the grocery store, you know, and it's like, oh yeah, if it's super hot and you got ice cream, all this frozen stuff, you're trying to, it's like, just dump it in there.
Yeah, every day. Yeah.
So the best fridge I found was the one at the Marriott at a Spring Hill Suites. My wife loved that.
Well, really? that's expensive.
That's why I'm not married.
No. Okay, excuse. We're going overlanding so you can better appreciate the 5-star experience.
Hey, there is a great view overlooking the ocean. It's beautiful.
True.
You guys should really check it out.
Sure.
Okay, so here's the next thing. So you guys, I hope you appreciate the pun, illuminated my mind here with electrons when you talked about, I finally start to understand amp power so I can do some calculation. But the other part of this is, how do I calculate what's coming in? So, like, for example, I look at my charge controller, right? And the solar's up there, and where I'm hooked up to the vehicle's 12-volt outlet and alternator's working. Mm-hmm. Watts and volts, like, how do I track what's coming in?
Mm-hmm.
What's being produced, right? The amp hours I know are going out.
Right.
Okay.
So watts is amps times volts, right? So if I am consuming 1 amp at 12 volts, I am using 12 watts.
Which, and I'm just going to say, in like 12 volts is pretty, that's the standard thing for most users,
sure.
Right?
Sure.
12 volts is what our American vehicles are standard, where a lot of, I'm pretty sure most of these overseas vehicles are generally 24 volt systems.
Yep.
And some old tractors in the U.S. generally were 24 volt systems.
Yep.
I'm not 100% sure why there was that big one or the other.
That's a good question. Yeah, a lot of heavy equipment, though, is 24 volts.
Some heavy equipment is, and it comes down to the device, because if you look in your buying a cooler or an ARB pump or whatever it may be, they'll usually give you an option, or you 24-volt system or a 12-volt system.
Right.
And I don't really understand why you would really want to do one more than the other. That right there is a little bit above my
That's the electrical engineer's job.
Okay. I'm the 12-volt guy.
Okay, well, let's stay on the world of 12 volts, because most of what I see out there in terms of consumer electronics and vehicles and charge controllers, everything's saying 12 volts.
Yeah.
So back to you, Ryan, on input of power, 12 volts, watts.
So your alternator in your truck is putting out 12 volts, we'll say. It's usually like 13.5 or something like that. It's more. You put out more than your battery consumes because you have to charge it, right? So you have to push it up to that level. So alternator produces the charging voltage for our 12-volt system, whatever that actual number is. So the alternator, we don't think about it. We don't get to change it. We don't get to mess with it. We don't do anything. It does what it does. That DC to DC brick made by Red Arc, it is managing that voltage coming from your alternator to feed it to your lithium battery in a careful
and optimized way.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, so it's still 12 volts. So alternator, source number one. Shore power, when we plug our house battery into shore power at home, that is also going through some version of conversion from alternating current in your wall to direct current to charge your battery.
Okay.
Right? And this big system here on the table, the Red Arc BMS battery manager system, it has a wall plug, a shore plug. So from that device, I plug it into the wall. That device converts wall power, 120 volt in the US,
AC,
to 12-ish volt DC to charge my house battery.
in a very controlled way. Like these are the optimized ways of doing it in this day and age. This is the most like high end technology I think we have in the market. You don't necessarily need that, but now you're going to find yourself out with a multimeter testing everything to make sure it's not overpowering, it's not overcharging you, because it only takes a matter of minutes for something to screw up because it's overcharging it and potentially melting something, which is what we haven't really talked about yet in the wiring. But these have parameters to where you can set your parameters to potentially shut off or disconnect when something gets to a low enough voltage to ultimately protect that startability. So if you are running this call completely off of one battery or maybe a series of batteries that you have, or sorry, parallel setup of batteries to start your vehicle again, these have shutoffs to maybe kill your fridge or kill something else that could be draining on it so you don't suck everything completely dry.
Yeah. Right, so to protect the batteries. That's, I remember. Protect. So you're protecting your battery
from over-discharge.
Yeah, from over-discharge, which is, again, like it could save you thousands of dollars.
Yeah, they're smart. They're super smart.
Save you being stuck, save you from wrecking your equipment. Yeah.
Lots of wins. Mm-hmm.
So alternator inputs to charge both systems, both your start battery directly and then your house battery through the DC to DC brick.
Yeah.
Shore power through a fancy battery manager that's plugged into the wall. And then while we're driving, solar. Or while we're parked, solar. Again, solar is taking the power of the sun and turning it into electrons and feeding it to your battery through a charge controller.
Right. And then why, like, you know, a solar panel will be 80 watts, 100 watts. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
Yep. It's, so watts is the amount of power it can supply, right? So power is watts. Current is amps and volts is potential, right? So those are the three big guys in electrons. So my 100 watt panel,
right?
I think the most panels are 12 volt panels, so they're pushing 100 watts at 12 volts, which means their maximum current they can actually, I think they're 24 volt panels. I don't remember. The math is the same.
I'm thinking my charge controller, which I pay attention to, right? So it's like when it's super bright and I have the auxiliary solar, it'll be like 14 point something is about as high as I've ever seen it. Volts.
So you can, again, just like your batteries.
It'll have a max and min regulator.
Yeah.
Not allowed to go over a certain voltage.
And that's what the charge controller does. But you can take multiple panels, just like multiple batteries, and wire them in parallel or series, depending on how you want them to push power out. I think, make sure I might screw this up. This is right. If I hook up two solar panels in series, series adds voltage. So if I have two 12 volt panels connected in series, I'm pushing 24 volts to the charge controller. The charge controller then does the work of converting that 24 volts into 12 at a good current to feed my battery appropriately. So again, watts is volts times amps. So you can go back the other way. How many amps is my solar panel producing? The number of watts divided by the voltage that it's tuned to produce. Mm-hmm. And they don't all produce at 100%, right? You know, your solar panel, depending if it's fully shaded, fully pointed at the sun, all that, it might only be putting out, typically it's not putting out 100 watts unless it's perfect. So it's putting out 80 watts.
Okay.
Welcome to the math.
Yeah.
Solar's a different planet.
It isn't. It's like a battery.
It is.
The math is the same. It just produces it, instead of from storage, it produces it from the sun.
I'd rather just have that capacity with me. Right on rainy days.
Well, that's what kind of where I'm getting down to here, Matt, is as a consumer, I'm thinking the math that's really important to start with is what got me all excited earlier, which is, okay, if I can figure out what kinds of appliances, devices, things I'll be running that consume power, and I can add that up in relation to the power storage, which is the batteries, then whether it's the alternator or it's solar all through a management system of some kind charging those batteries, really, they can only charge so much so fast.
Correct.
So it's the storage that matters versus how much I plan to use on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Like that's the math equation you really need to nail. Then I would say, right? Then you get your solar, you run your alternator and your battery management, but you should be good if you've done that preliminary math.
Yeah. Yeah. Until you park for too long and now you're not producing it through your alternator and it's cloudy. You have no inputs to your overland vehicle now and it will run out of power.
Yeah. And that's why that extra
regulate and shut you down.
Yeah.
Before
fancy
you get to
battery manager.
And there's even simpler, there's devices that you can hook up in line with your main drive battery that'll just disk do it. They'll all act as a master shutoff for your entire car system once it gets below like 10.5 volts or somewhere in that ballpark or where it needs this minimum to start your vehicle again. Yep. It'll just kill everything. So you're obvious that we're getting too low as the lights go out.
Right.
The fridge turns off, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Because even these Dometic fridges have like safety features built inside them to where the compressor will quit kicking on and it'll just become a cooler again.
Totally.
If it's running out of that voltage that it needs to continue to keep that compressor to keep that temperature at a certain, wherever it's set at.
In the manual, it's usually called the low voltage cutoff.
Mm-hmm.
It'll just shut itself down because there's not enough voltage. And you can change them. Like I know on my fridge, I can say, I want you to turn off at 11 volts mm-hmm. or I want you to turn off at 9 volts because I don't care about the start capacity of this battery. I just care about its over-discharge capacity. And so you can pick which one you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of that, again, just keeps underscoring for me the need, the necessity of some kind of management system.
Yeah.
If you're going with a Shure battery.
Yeah. And what I was referring to there is the fridge itself is just paying attention to how much power is available and turning itself off. That's not part of the whole system. That's where
that's the fridge.
The Red Arc battery manager, the whole total vehicle, I think it's actually TVMS is its acronym, Total Vehicle Management System.
Yeah.
When you do that, now you have, I'm holding this cool Red Vision panel. This is my interface with the electronics, both either through Bluetooth on my phone or the buttons on this Red Vision panel where I can see and monitor and change settings and interact with what it's doing.
Yeah.
This is the best of the best. You can go down to a simple little circuit that's just plugged in that has no display. It has no nothing.
That's the brick you were talking about.
No, even dumber than that is it's just a circuit that when it sees...
auto disconnect.
Yeah, when it sees 11 volts or less, it just shuts off.
Yeah, I think the National Luna fridge has that.
That's what's inside of all of them.
Yeah, yeah, to protect. Yeah.
So there's you can dumb it down. Dumb is not a good term. It's dumb. It's just
minimalize it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Versus super smart, like a total vehicle management system.
Right. Which would be cool. Like I look at that, you know, what is that called again? The Red Vision.
The Red Vision. Yeah. This is the Red Vision.
I mean, as someone who is learning more and more and more about power management and vehicles, like to me, this would just be fun to geek out on.
Oh, it is.
You know, to be like, how many amps am I getting in? How much am I drawing? Like, just keep refining my system till I know exactly what, you know, my normal use case is, which this is incidental, but I find the more I learn about building, setting up and using an overland vehicle, more I apply all that to my own house. I come back, I'm like, my house is so inefficient. Oh, it's got this, it's got that. Like, we need to change this and that. And why do we have all this extra stuff, right?
Yeah.
That's a whole nother podcast.
But. Yeah, it is. But it comes right down to water usage. Like, the same thing. Like, you learn when you're on a trip to like, oh, water is precious. I'm not going to use it like a madman to wash my dishes.
Yeah.
My kids learned that camping.
You bet.
And it does come back to your normal life. You're like, hey, I should maybe be careful with what I'm using here.
Right.
And you bring up water there. It kind of reminded me of the, to maybe understand more of what we've talked about this whole episode here, and then also maybe make sense of some of the stuff we probably explained incorrectly, would be to just go online. There is tons of resources that break this down. It took me forever to understand what an ohm was.
Sure.
And some of the best analogies are these videos where they just give you a garden hose and they explain what the current is versus what the voltage is, what versus the ohms is, where that resistance is. And it kind of gives you something to picture in your mind when you're looking at a battery, the DC to DC brick, the charge controller, to know how does this all fit in? Because when you look at this piece of wire, you got to envision maybe water going through there in order for you to really be able to make sense of what's actually happening here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really helps it when you're putting this together, because one thing we didn't really talk a lot about was connecting these to each other.
Yeah.
And that is all via wire. Right. Granted, we're not talking about anything Bluetooth at the moment.
Yeah.
All that wire, that's where a lot of the safety comes in, because you can put as many of these devices in your truck as you want, as many batteries you want. If you don't have the correct amperage grade, or sorry, the correct grade of wire, the thickness of that wire, the gauge, and you don't have it fused properly, you're immediately putting everything at risk. And that's not even just in the amperage and the numbers. That's a lot to do with heat, whether it be radiant heat or convected heat or whatever your application setup is, you're just really going to make sure you're protecting everything as much as possible so you're not creating meltdowns or fires, which I know we all probably have stories we could share for another hour on times where we thought this is enough and we hooked it together with some 22 gauge thin wire that we used a little wire nut that we found in the junk drawer in the house.
Yep.
And boom, we had our new compressor.
You know, and there's so many different approaches, right? Like a lot of people might be interested in doing a DIY approach in which a whole podcast on wiring would really help those people. Other people just need to be able to speak the language to a pro shop that's qualified to do that kind of install.
Yeah.
And just tell them, you know, here's what I'm after and here's why.
Yeah.
And speak the language enough, right?
Yeah.
They're not going to risk trying to do their own install.
I hope we can we kind of accomplish that in this podcast.
Yeah.
Like, okay, here's all the parts and pieces. This is where you start from just your cell phone or your starter battery to putting in a total vehicle management system with an AUX battery. By no means, like Matt said, now we got to install the thing.
Mm-hmm.
There is a whole nother podcast there to do it well.
You bet.
Especially if you're going to do it yourself. I know we did the masterclass or the Zero to Hero.
Yes, masterclass
on the third gen 4Runner.
Yep.
Clay and Tanner spent a lot of time trying to explain way more detail of what how is this done well, and that's a great at least a primer on doing it yourself. It's a really good
great.
Series.
Agreed.
And again, even beyond that, you can go to the next level, and start to get into the details of how do I connect my wires.
Well, when Matt was speaking just a minute ago, I got thinking about our communications podcast that we did recently, and how. When it comes to something like ham radio, like we're introducing people to that on the podcast, we're explaining what it is, why you might want to have it. From there, you just go and go and go in terms of learning.
Totally.
It's your ticket to learn. This is your episode to learn more, you know.
You bet.
We've done this a lot. We've got a lot of experience with it, but we're by no means professionals. We're not electrical engineers. We're taking and we're experimenting ourselves and trying the best, and we've failed a lot of things. We've melted a lot of things. I learned stuff just in the past 24 hours of other things that I've tried and tampered with, and that's what's fun about this. That's what we're overlanders. There's no perfect map into the mountains, into the world that we're going to go into. We're going to go out there and screw up, but we're just doing what we can to kind of set some, you know, operating procedures if things go wrong, what to do next, so we don't get hurt, because at the end of the day, we always want to come home to our families and be able to go out the next week and do it again.
Yeah, I definitely think overlanding is an example of where knowledge is power, and that the more you learn, right, the more skill sets you get, the more self-sufficient you become, the more empowered you are to get out and do all kinds of things and do it confidently.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just super fun as you get those skills and you get the knowledge. There's just the world starts to open up to you out there. So
new skills.
It's fun.
Well, guys, speaking of power and our early metaphor, we've run out.
The voltage has run out in our hourglass. As you see, the current flow is quit.
Yeah.
The 2 centimeter ohm resistance in the center. I've not.
Oh, yeah. It's not
right
a bad analogy. It's there.
But all I got to do is this, and look, she's recharged.
She's recharged. That's the best.
That's it.
Well, thanks, guys, for being on today. Appreciate it. And I think there are more episodes to come around the same subject. So
totally.
I'll hit you up for some more.
Thanks.
For sure.
All right.
Thanks,
everyone, for joining us. Remember, if you're listening and you'd like to check out these podcasts visually and you'd like to check out all our archive content and newly released content, check out Overlander Network. And until next time, bye.
Thank you so much for joining us. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review. It really helps. We appreciate your support. And until next time, stay adventurous.